Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 260, recorded July 27th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello once again.
So who have we got this week?
We just have two people this week. We have Joe in Michigan and Maggie from the contact page on the Aquarimax website.
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah, sometimes we go there.
Okay.
Should we start with Joe?
Yes.
Okay. Joe says, I have some questions about my girl's tank. I got some snails when I put plants in, so I then bought two assassin snails to take care of the population. Now they have attached to each other, see picture, which he sent and we will put up for people. Are they reproducing or fighting or something I haven't thought of yet?
Okay, let's talk about that one first. Yes, they probably are. It probably is mating behavior. One thing about assassin snails is they do not reproduce nearly as quickly as a lot of the other familiar aquarium snails. So just the fact that they're mating doesn't mean you're going to be inundated by a whole lot of little assassin snails soon. You may very well see a few eggs, but they lay fewer eggs than, say, ram's horns or pond snails or whatever. They lay many fewer eggs, and the eggs they lay, many of them don't hatch. So I think when I started breeding assassin snails a few years ago, I started out with about six of them, and I think it was a good 4 months before I saw another, saw a baby, maybe even longer. I'm trying to remember now, but
it did take a while. Well, because they bury down under the gravel, don't they? And they take a while.
Yeah, you don't see the babies for a while, and then all of a sudden you'll see one that has obviously been around for a while, is usually what happens. They seem to hide in the substrate. And so I wouldn't worry thinking, oh no, now I'm going to have lots of little baby snails, because you might have a few, but probably not very many. And not very fast.
Well, if they've already eaten all the other snails, they usually need higher protein to keep reproducing. So if you don't keep feeding them other snails very much...
Yeah, we're actually going to talk about that a little bit more later on.
Oh, was I getting ahead of it?
No, you weren't. You were doing fine, but that comes up a little later. We'll talk more about assassin snail diet in a little while. But yeah, but it probably was mating behavior.
Okay. Next question is, the Anubias has some spots. The spots seem to only be on the leaves that were on the plant when I bought it about a year ago. The new leaves seem to be clean. And he sent pictures of that too. Any ideas? And again, we'll put all those pictures up.
Yep. It's fairly normal for Anubias to get a little spotty because the leaves are very long-lived and algae do seem to be attracted to the older leaves. So that's fairly normal to get a little bit on there.
Did the spots look like algae?
Yeah, they do.
Because they're kind of brown.
Mm-hmm.
Brown algae?
There are lots of different kinds of algae. And they could be diatoms. You know, that's fairly common manifestation of diatoms to be...
What's a diatom?
Spotty. It's basically a type of algae.
Oh, okay.
There are different types. And one type makes little round spots on things. Some of them are green, some of them are brown. Different things. But that's probably what it is.
Can he just clip off those leaves?
You can clip off those leaves if you want. It won't hurt anything, really. It might make the Anubias look a little spindly, depending on how many they are in comparison to the other leaves. It looks like there are quite a few healthy looking leaves on there too, but you can do that. Some fish and shrimp will help clean those off. I'm not remembering exactly what types of fish you have in the tank though, and depending on that you may not be able to put shrimp in. In terms of fish that might eat it, Otocinclus will sometimes eat diatoms. Might be worth it if your aquarium setup lends itself to keeping Otocinclus, but you can certainly pinch it off. Pinch off the offending leaves as they're old anyway, if it looks like that's going to improve the overall appearance of the plant. If it looks like it's going to make the plant look too bare, then don't do that.
Okay.
But there you go. In just general sorts of algae control mechanisms besides an algae crew might also help. So if you can...
He doesn't already have
plant growth going on. You could try adding some Flourish Excel. Different things like that to kind of outcompete
algae.
Uh-huh.
Okay. He goes on, the girls like the blue gravel, but I like the way the plants grow in the Seachem black sand that I have in the Fluval 5-gallon. Any reason I couldn't put a small layer, 1 inch or so, on top of the sand substrate for looks? I'm guessing cleaning might be a pain.
Well, that's a good question. A couple of things to think about. I, for quite a long time, had a tank where I had some aquatic soil, which is, you know, smaller particulate than the gravel, smaller particle size than gravel, and then I had a cap of gravel on top of it. And that actually worked pretty well. And I'm thinking that what you propose with the fluorite black sand and the gravel on top of it might work something like that. It depends on what you've got in the tank. You know, if you have goldfish, they're going to be picking up the substrate and spitting it out all the time. Wouldn't work. But I don't think you have goldfish in there. What I noticed would happen, and this is with the Malaysian trumpet snails in there, in that particular tank, that they would, when I would gravel wash, it would pull the aquatic soil up to the top wherever I pushed the gravel washer down into the substrate.
So did the gravel kind of get buried after a
while? The gravel would kind of get buried right in that spot, and the aquatic soil would settle on the top of it. But over time, it would reverse.
It would settle back down.
It would settle back down. And I'm not sure if that was the action of the Malaysian trumpet snails or not, but it seemed to work just fine.
Okay, so he could probably try that then.
Right, and if your tank is heavily planted enough, you don't really need to mess in the gravel. You just kind of put the gravel washer over the gravel, and any loose detritus that comes up, you know, let that go. Remove that from your tank, but don't really dig in the gravel because you want the roots to be able to
stay there,
function undisturbed in the substrate, and for the various chemical and bacterial processes to occur there underneath there without being disturbed, and that will be good for the plants and good for the roots and everything. And any turnover that you want to happen down there can be accomplished by adding some Malaysian trumpet snails that dig around in there a little bit. Of course, with assassin snails, you're not going to have a whole lot of Malaysian trumpet snails around because they will eat them.
That's true.
But I'm guessing it'll probably work for you. But just, you know, like I said, lightly. If you have a cap of gravel that's, you said, 1 inch or so, and you just don't dig down deep into the gravel to touch the sand, you should be okay, pretty much.
Sounds like a good idea. He says, last question. My parents have a place on a small inland lake. Could I harvest plants out of the lake for aquarium use?
Well, the short answer is I don't recommend it. The long answer is I don't recommend it, and here's why. One is the possibility of introducing diseases to your fish. There are various ones that you could introduce that way, potentially. Another one is, and I'm including parasites along with diseases. You know, you could introduce various things like that. Leeches, for example, that would attack your fish. That's a possibility.
That would not be fun.
In addition to, you know, much smaller parasites you might not even see, or microorganisms, pathogens of that sort that could be bad. So, that aside, you could also introduce hitchhikers of other kinds that would not be beneficial to your tank. For example, dragonfly larvae. They get big enough to eat fish. You know, they're not going to eat an 8-inch goldfish, but they would eat guppies, for example. So, that's another reason. And you might introduce something that is either, you know, it's unnoticeable in terms of its size when you introduce it, but later on it could
cause a problem.
Issues. Yes.
Yeah.
It's also possible that you might inadvertently move something that's not legal to move.
That's true, huh?
Yeah. There are, in an effort to keep waterways from being contaminated with exotic invasive species of various sorts, there are sometimes very strict rules about what can be removed from a particular lake and how it is to be removed and so on. So you would at least want to check on that and see if there are any rules of that nature. But sometimes there are plants like hydrilla, which is an awful invasive plant that has contaminated a lot of the waterways in the U.S. And people, I believe it was introduced as part of the aquarium trade. but has been outlawed in some places and has caused a lot of problems because of, you know, it moves around and it'll, a small bit can come with a boat or whatever and really damage an ecosystem in a particular area. So that's another reason why I would avoid it. Yeah, I'm not saying it's impossible to do. People have done it. It can work, but those are some reasons why I would recommend against it.
Okay.
But it's a great question.
Yep. You good? Should we go to Maggie?
Yeah.
Okay. She's actually talking about assassin snails, too.
Mm-hmm.
She says, my assassin snails bred and completely finished all the pest snails, and I am lost as to what to feed them. I also infected two of my other tanks with pest snails, and I really need an alternative food supply as the pest snails in the other tanks are breeding but not fast enough. Can you please advise?
Okay. Well, first, thank you for contacting us, Maggie. I think this is the first time Maggie has ever contacted us. Let's talk about assassin snails and food. Well, in order to breed a lot, assassin snails do need snails or a similar meaty food. Doesn't necessarily have to be snails as long as it's similar.
You feed them like, what did you,
mice something that I have used for that. I have used mice shrimp. One of the most successful, I think, thing that I found was chopped mussels. I could get mussels in, you know, I'd buy them at the aquarium store.
Frozen
in those little blister packs where you just push out the little square from the foil. You know, there's the plastic and then the foil, and you push on the plastic and it pops out of the foil. I would get the mussels that way, and they were already out of the shell and everything, and put those in, and the assassin snails loved those, ate those, did well with those. I gave that to them once a week or so, you know, approximately, it depended. And that worked well. Let's see. And that's if you want to try to maintain, you know, some breeding. You need to do the meaty foods like that fairly frequently. If you don't really mind if they slow down or stop breeding, you can give other foods and they will eat them. Things like algae chips, which have some fish meal in them typically, they will eat those and they will subsist on them for long periods of time, but they won't really breed very much on them. Things like shrimp pellets, any kind of meaty fish food you can do if you're just looking at a maintenance diet. If you're doing breeding, you want to be heavier on the
actual
things like
meat.
The chopped mussels, yeah, the actual meat. And I would recommend including some snails in their diet. So if you have those pest snails and they're not breeding fast enough, you can throw them in when you have them and then use like the chopped mussels or something similar to that, and, you know, more regularly. And then in between you can give them the algae chips or the pellets or the sinking wafers, made especially for carnivores, that kind of thing. And they'll be fine on that. In general.
Didn't we find one time we went into, I don't know, PetSmart or Petco or something, and they always have pest snails in all the tanks. Didn't you just say, hey, can I have some of those? Take them off your hand. And they're like, great, get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
For free.
I have done that, yeah.
Yeah, so if you want to, I don't know, do it a little more cheaply.
Yeah, and if you don't have fish in with your assassin snails, that can be a pretty good way to do it. If you do have fish in with your assassin snails and they're just pulling these snails randomly out of the tanks, then
I guess that's true. You don't know what else is going in.
Mindful that, yeah, you might be, yeah, it might be a disease issue there, possibly. But yeah, you can definitely get some. And Malaysian trumpet snails do breed very quickly. And if you were to go in and get some and then start breeding them in a tank that was free of fish,
just feeder snails.
As feeder snails, they're one of the fastest breeders. And you can get a lot of them going that way. So that's, you know, that can be a good thing to do if you, I don't know which type of feeder snails you're breeding or pest snails you're breeding, but that would be a good addition to the species you're breeding. They work well. I once acquired a tank as a giveaway, as a gift, 55-gallon tank that probably contained, I don't know, 300 to 500 Malaysian trumpet snails. I don't know. And I put maybe 20 assassin snails in it, and it wasn't too long before they were all gone.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't keep up with them
fast.
In terms of, you can't put enough Malaysian trumpet snails in a tank with assassin snails to keep them in them indefinitely. But if you keep them separately and, you know, feed them enough and so on, you'll get a lot of snails. So that could be a way to do it.
She has one more question, too. Mm-hmm. She says, also, I have a clown placo, and although she is feeding primarily on bogwood, I think she may need other sources of food, but I cannot find more information on live food or type she may need.
Hmm, okay. Well, most, you know, clown placos are pretty good wood feeders. They do eat the wood. They like it. They seem to need it. At least some people say they need it. And it's good that you have it in there, definitely. I wouldn't cease to offer the bogwood. I think that's good. I've never kept clown placos, but a quick look online, they seem to eat, in addition to the bogwood, a lot of the other things that, you know, normal, more run-of-the-mill, like bristlenose placos will eat. And so if you were to offer some shrimp pellets, some sinking wafers of various kinds, not just the algae wafers, but, you know, the carnivore wafers, that would be good. You can offer slices of sweet potato. Just don't make them super thick because they can kind of cloud the water. They have a lot of sugar in them and they can cloud the water.
So just thin slices?
Put a thin slice in and after a few days take it out if they haven't, you know, eaten it, finished it. But all the same things like zucchini, a green bean, canned green bean split down the middle and dropped in. Should go for that. Let's see. Anything like a frozen pea that's been slipped out of the skin, that kind of thing. Those are some good items you can try that should help. Yeah, because, you know, some people neglect the protein aspect of what placos will eat, and certain kinds need to eat more than others. But I would kind of make a sort of an omnivorous thing. Don't just give vegetables, but give some meaty foods too.
Okay.
And that would probably be good. I know the wood is, like I said, the wood seems to be important for a lot of placos. Even just normal ancestrus that won't die if you don't give it to them.
They do better with it.
They do better with it. They seem to enjoy it and eat a lot of it if you offer it. So I would, go with that.
Okay. Very good. So thank you to both of our contributors. And do you have anything for us?
Well, let's see. Basically, we're just still cycling that axolotl tank. It's not ready yet, but it will be soon. I'm excited about that. We were able to establish the temperature. We got the check valve in there and lowered the water flow because they really don't need a lot. Just want to get a kind of a slow trickle on the sponge filter. We were able to make sure the temperature does not exceed 72 degrees, which is really nice. That's just about perfect. So we'll be doing that soon. I've noticed that the Opaiula are all breeding again. I've got another round going. So this summer is a very productive Opaiula summer. Other than that, I think that's about it.
Okay. Well, until next time.
May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.